Welcome to Talk Farm to Me. I am your host, Dana, or Farm Girl. I have a small farm of my own that is featured on the Accidental Farm podcast in 100 5-minute episodes. Here, however, we go deeper into the farming world with conversations with serious farmers to learn about their work, their struggles, and their successes. It is my hope that you will get to know these farmers as I have, and that you and I together can become more informed and more supportive of their important work. Did you know that less than 2% of us are farmers? It's a staggeringly low number given the weight of their responsibilities. Let's dive in and get to know a farmer in this elite community of important providers.
What you're looking at is some of the finest rice land in the nation.
When you think of farmers, what comes to mind first? Meat or veggies? Cows or cauliflower? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that when I say the word farmer, you think of a man, probably white, in his 60s.
My name is Bob Lynn. I farm this ground just as my parents...
And you wouldn't be far off from the truth. The U.S. Department of Agriculture conducts an agricultural census every 5 years, the last one in 2017. According to that survey, the U.S. has 3.4 million producers who are 57 and a half years of age on average. 73.6% are men, and 95% of them are white.
Rice was grown on a limited scale in Arkansas, but it became commercially important in 1905, and since has become...
When I say farmer, I don't think flowers. Not immediately, anyway. It's way down the farmer list for me. That's why talking with Elise Forney, a small-scale flower farmer from Michigan, for this episode was so much fun. I got the chance to dive into the world of peonies, my all-time favorites, and dahlias, which are growing a cult following of their own, and to discover that for this charming flower farmer, the point maybe more than flowers. Come with me to Howell, Michigan, about 30 minutes north of Ann Arbor, to a 5-acre parcel of a formerly 200-plus-acre farm in the middle of Gardening Zone 5B. More on this later. Bright Side Blooms definitely faces the bright side of things, from dirt to flowers to community. Flower farmer Elise Forney, like more than 26% of farmers today, did not start out in farming. In college, Elise was pre-med before graduating with a bachelor's degree in psychology and studying for her master's in industrial organizational psychology before jumping into a career in real estate and then pharmaceuticals. Let's start here, where Elise leaves Big Pharma for a small farm. It wasn't an immediate jump or a direct path. As a matter of fact, the Forneys bought this 5-acre farm circa 1810, formerly called Broad Acres Farm, on somewhat of a lark in 2018. For the previous 23 years, the farm was home to a summer camp, bringing local kids closer to nature, to farm life, and to the animals that live there, including horses, goats, sheep, and cows. Elise confesses that she was drawing outside the lines a little, and her friends agreed, but her husband knew that when they went to look at that farm the first time, something was about to happen. With 3 young boys under her wing, now 5, 10, and 13, and a call to do something different, it just seemed right. Elise considered growing hops, raising sheep or hogs, and even continuing the farm's life as a camp. But something in her past led her to flowers, and she does not regret it.
I had all these different ideas, and I said, you know what? I think this feels really good. I want to grow flowers, and I want to sell flowers. And so we sell subscriptions, floral subscriptions, bouquets. We do workshops on site. I have a studio on site. And then I also started 2 seasons ago selling bulbs. I specialize in fancy daffodil and tulip bulbs.
And what do you mean by fancy?
So fancy is some of the tulips that you're not going to find like at Home Depot or your average garden center. It's the double tulips, the parrot tulips, the peony tulips. So to me, they're extra pretty. And so I call them fancy. And then it's not just your typical yellow daffodil. It's white daffodils and double daffodils and butterfly daffodils and peach colors. So I just really pick what I think is beautiful. And then those are the bulbs that I plant and sell.
And how, with all of the ideas that you had from hops to flowers, how did you circle in on flowers ultimately?
You know, I think it actually was inspired a lot by growing up. I had people in my life who loved to grow flowers, and I didn't really appreciate it then that much. But looking back, I think it was still a part of me. And then I lived in Britain for a while. So I lived in Scotland. And it's funny, I look back at all the pictures that I took in Scotland, you know, with my little disposable camera. And they're all of like gardens and like just random doors and flowers. And I think like the gardens there, I was always so enthralled with how they brought flowers and vegetation and decorative plants into every space. And I just think that's part of their culture. And I feel like I was just so captivated by that. And I think that had a lot to do with moving in that direction.
As urban areas creep in on formerly rural communities like Howell, many of the farms have been repurposed, but some, like Brightside Blooms, have kept their farming roots. For this 200-year-old farm that already had a different life as a children's camp for a quarter century, the return to growing continues the farm's legacy, even if in a smaller footprint.
So there's still some large-scale farms that I can actually see from my window. There's a handful of families that own, you know, hundreds and hundreds of acres that's still being farmed for hay, and I think there's soybeans, wheat that I can see, you know. So I think we only sit on 5 acres, and I have the old homestead, you know, the old farmhouse and old barns. But this farm was a part of hundreds of acres that I can still see, and many of it has been just kind of sectioned off. Some of it has been, you know, built on, and it's now subdivisions. Other parts of it are still being maintained, you know, for their original farming purpose.
So tell me about your farm specifically, what you're growing and what that looks like and what it's looked like since you started, like how it's evolving.
I'm growing a host of different flowers. I focus a lot on tulips just because people love tulips and I love tulips. And so we're growing a ton of those, obviously.
By a ton, Elise means that she planted nearly 7,000 tulips this year on her small 5-acre farm.
And then we do a lot of dahlias. So right now I'm waking up dahlia tubers and, you know, kind of getting those ready to pre-sprout to be planted out. And then we do a lot of zinnias and celosia, a whole bunch of different herbs. I like to put herbs in my bouquets. So a lot of basil, dill, many different types of basil. And then we're also growing, you know, like gomphrena, a lot of different fillers. So we have many raised beds and then rows that I use, you know, fabric for weed barrier. And I tend to do a lot of succession planting. So like I'll pull out the tulips, we'll harvest those, and then I'll amend the soil as much as I can. And then we'll plant out, you know, the dahlias where the tulips were growing. We use the space, you know, really efficiently.
So when you pull out the tulips, you pull out the bulbs themselves and store them?
So for harvesting tulips for cut flowers, you do have to pull out the bulb. This is really strange, and this was weird when I learned it the first time. And then you cut the bulb off so that you have a longer stem length, and The other reason is that it won't regenerate well if you're cutting it that deeply on the stem. So you kind of have to toss the bulbs. But, you know, sometimes I'll give them away and people will get like little short tulips out of them. So that's how we harvest them.
You said that you're waking up your dahlias. Explain what that means and why you have to wake them up.
So my tubers live in my crawl space all winter long because I am zone 5B. So they will not live over the winter. The soil gets too frozen for them to survive.
Two things quickly here. A tuber. Do you know what that is? It's a specialized storage stem of certain seed plants. Tubers are usually short and thick and typically grow below the soil. They are basically the resting stage of different kinds of plants and allow different species to overwinter. End zones? Let's cover that for a hot second. The USDA has 13 defined plant hardiness zones that will guide you in planting based on climate traits like temperature and rainfall, stuff like that. Number 1 is the coldest and 13 is the hottest. Brightside blooms is in zone 5B, which has mild summers and cold winters with the average minimum winter temperature falling between negative 10 and negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit. This area's short growing season lasts from late spring to mid-fall, with the first frost occurring around mid-October. Zone 5B is slightly more mild than 5A in terms of lowest winter temperatures, but still requires tubers to be protected.
So in the fall, I pull out the tubers, I pack them away, I wash them, I pack them away with some sawdust, and then I put them in my crawl space because it's cool enough for them and dark. And then about 6 to 8 weeks before I'm ready to plant them out, which they get planted out, you know, after our last frost, which for Michigan is mid-May thereabouts. I pull them out, I warm them up, I put them under some lights, and then they start to develop eyes. And then they shoot off some sprouts, you know, so it gives them a jump start on the growing season. They're kind of divas in a lot of ways, but, you know, people do love them. And I love them. I think they're just amazing. It's funny, though, I'm really quick to rid myself of any that are kind of problematic or don't do well in a vase.
How else are you deciding what to grow besides personal preference or what you hear from customers?
That's a good question. I feel like it's all of the above. I mean, I've grown things that look beautiful, but don't do well in a vase, right? So I'm a cut flower farm. It has to do well in a vase. So if that's the case, it's gone the next season. I've grown things that have just been, you know, really high maintenance that I say, you know, I probably won't grow them again the following season. For me, things that are what we call cut and come again, which is you cut them and then they'll still continue blooming on that same plant, is really a sweet spot because obviously, you know, like zinnias are a great example of a cut and come again flower. And, you know, as much as I cut it, they'll just keep blooming. Cosmos is another one. So that has a lot to do with what I put in the ground. You know, it's just really trial and error and what does well in a vase and what I like.
Give me some examples of flowers that you have fired from the farm.
Certain types of basil I've fired because they're beautiful, but they don't last in a vase. The dinner plate dahlias. Have you heard of the dinner plate dahlias? So they call them that because they're as big as your head, right? You know, they're amazing and gorgeous, but they take up too much space in an arrangement and they just don't work for me. I had red zinnias that were, you know, as a flower itself, the texture was beautiful. They did well, but I never used them. I never cut them. And a lot of other farmers say that too. Like for some reason, red is a weird color for flowers. I don't know. I grew asters and they're just gorgeous. And I love the asters. They were beautiful. But they, as soon as you cut one little stem of the flower, it's done. So I fired those as well, even though they're just gorgeous. So if it doesn't suit me in a vase, it's just, yeah, it's gone.
Let's talk about how your selling your flowers? I know you have a subscription, but tell me how it works in your local community, how you're getting the word out, and what's your big sell?
I feel like sales and marketing can be very shiny, and it's a fast industry, and you know, it's in some ways it's the antithesis of farming. I don't know. And so I've had to really kind of like rethink what sales is. And, you know, I'm not really selling. I am trying to build a community and trying to educate and trying to learn. So last season, the bulk of my flowers were used in workshops, actually. So I do have my subscriptions, and they are 4 weeks long in length. And then there are three waves throughout the summer. And I've limited those just because it's a lot of work to get them ready and get them out. I also have a local retailer. It's a bookshop, and she allows me to drop flowers at her location, and that's starting this season. So I'm really looking forward to that because it's something I hadn't done in the past. But people love the connection of coming to a workshop and kind of the girls' night out feel, or the, you know, whatever it may be, private parties. We have done lots of private parties. And then I walk them through, you know, how to put together a bouquet. And I would say the bulk of my flowers go to that now because those have grown. I love, you know, that feels good to me to do that. So.
And can you share a couple of tips with me about bouquet making?
I always start my classes with, there are no rules and you are creative. And that's a big part of what I try to speak to, is so many people feel like they're not creative, and they limit themselves on what they can do, and they kind of get paralyzed by the thought of having to craft something or create something. And so that's where I start all of my workshops, and I try to put everybody at ease with that. It's funny, I started my workshops walking people through like an identical design. So like, you know, everybody put that stem here, and then everybody would take the identical stem and put it there. And I quickly thought, you know, this isn't working. This isn't me. This doesn't work. You know, everybody walks out with the same exact thing, and it's boring, and it's not, they're not putting their imprint on it.
Elise felt the need to make a shift away from this copycat model. She uses a theater metaphor now, the four S's.
You have your script, which is your mechanics. And your mechanics can be your vessel and maybe what you've put in your vessel to help you arrange the flowers. You have your supporting cast, which is your kind of your, like your filler. You have your star, which is your, you know, your big flowers. That would be like your dahlias, right? Or your big headed round showstoppers. And then you have, for me, and this is what I added, you have a surprise. I feel like every bouquet has to have a surprise, whether it's, you know, a goofy piece of grass that's maybe standing up taller than everything else, or maybe most of your palette's white and you have something that is a different color that pops. Everybody's surprise is different, but most of the time in a workshop, I have everyone go around and tell me what their surprise is, and we share. So that's kind of the loose framework that I work under.
I feel like you've brought your psychology background. I think it's snuck in there.
Yeah.
In your workshops to like liberate people a little bit.
Yeah. Liberate them for sure. And calm them, you know, I mean, we're all in this, like, I feel like constant state of stress right now. And anxiety is so high. And one workshop that stands out to me was a group of middle school and high school teachers. And they had something that happened in Michigan that week that was just horrible relating to school. And, you know, they came to my workshop and all of them were a mess. I mean, just, you know, just stressed. You could just tell, you could read it on their body language, right? Their shoulders are up here. They're just stressed.
Elise is quietly referring to a school shooting in Oxford, Michigan in 2019, just a few towns over from Brightside Bloom's farm and flower studio that left four dead and really rattled all of the nearby communities, none more than the kids and the teachers in schools. Everyone was on edge, and the teachers, both shaken personally and needing to be there for their students, were extra anxious. Elise applied her usual approach.
my goal is that when you walk into my barn, and I call it the Bloom Barn, when you come to the Bloom Barn, you're here to be mindful. You're here to create something. And through that creation, you reach creative flow, which hopefully will, you know, it's a meditative state. So hopefully that will kind of release some of that tension and just bring, you know, bring you back down. So that, yeah, that's definitely been my goal.
The visit from the teachers was a turning point for Elise and for her farm's purpose.
I didn't set out to do that. I saw it kind of happening organically, and I thought, wow, you know, that's a gift. So I'm, you know, when people feel that way, they feel relaxed on the farm. That's a beautiful thing to me.
Yes, she grows flowers. Yes, she's a farmer. But Elise sees that she has another opportunity in her community to be local, to be a part of the community, not just growing flowers, but connecting people with nature, with beauty, and with the part of themselves that needs all of that, whether they realize it at first or not. Brightside Blooms is local, to be sure. And it's a small farm, yes. But it's also part of a resurgence for growing flowers in the United States, the slow shift away from international imports, flower by flower.
I'm curious what you can tell me about the industry that you sit in, the flower industry.
I think it was the late 70s. The importing of flowers changed. I believe it was related to tariffs and how imports were being accepted, floral imports particularly. To that point, we had, you know, all been local growers. The U.S. was supplying its own flowers. And then in the late 70s, that changed. And since then, the bulk of our flowers, I've seen anywhere from, I think it's like 75 to 85% of our flowers are imported.
Elise is right about this. The U.S. produces just about 25% of the world's cut flowers.
And most of them come from South America.
Indeed, 81% of cut flowers imported to the United States come from Colombia and Ecuador.
So when you go to the grocery store, the average grocery store, or wherever the average florist, they're coming from outside of the country.
As a matter of fact, in the U.S., the biggest florist is Kroger, the grocery store chain, which sells flowers in 2,800 stores in 35 states.
I think there's a huge resurgence that is happening overall in the floral industry, where we're looking at this from many ways, sustainability being one of them. And I think just kind of reowning flowers as something that we are providing in this country. I think there's just an overall resurgence in, you know, local flower farmers. The cut flower industry is growing as far as just their presence within, you know, different larger groups, agricultural groups.
According to a recent Research and Markets report on the U.S. cut flower market, the production in the U.S. is expected to grow from $9.2 billion to $12.8 billion from 2021 to 2028.
I think there's a huge gap of knowledge existing still. Like, you know, most of the average people don't understand where their grocery store flowers are coming from. And I think we as a collective, meaning like cut flower growers, are trying to educate with that.
In addition to Colombia and Ecuador, other top international flower producers include the Netherlands, especially for tulips, Canada, and Mexico. Domestically, 75% of flowers sold come from California.
I just feel like overall, there's this kind of like return to, why aren't we growing flowers in the U.S.? And I know that's the message I try to get out, is that, you know, the carbon footprint of a dozen roses that have been sprayed multiple times and traveled in a refrigeration truck for a week or two to get to your local Kroger are very different than what I'm growing, you know, in my farm. I'm glad that that's happening. I just think we have a lot of work to do. And the other thing that happened when most of the flowers started being imported instead of grown here is they started only growing flowers that could sustain a long distance, right? So, you know, like it's very difficult to get imported dahlias because it's hard for them to be imported. But yet now we're all growing dahlias. You know, I say we as in all of these farmers across the nation. And it's like so exciting to kind of be a part of this wave. And I think there's so many flower farmers that are just growing, you know, their presence is growing and they're educating. And I feel like a small part of that. But I think you're going to see over the next 10 years a big change in how flowers are produced. And hopefully they'll be imported less.
It's very interesting. When I go to my local grocery store, it will show me an organically grown tomato, where it comes from, and a conventionally grown tomato and where it comes from, whether that's, you know, New Jersey or Mexico or what have you. There's so much communication now because I think consumers have demanded it around certain segments, especially in the produce aisle. So it's really interesting that flowers are, they're a little, maybe a little behind.
I think they are a little behind. And I just think that we just, you know, we have a lot to learn. And they don't have the same standards as produce as far as country of origin or having to label things. I'm not on a soapbox to say that, you know, all imported flowers are wrong. That's definitely not my stance. You know, there are times when I use flowers that have been imported, but I just think that overall we have a lot to learn as a country. And I think there's a lot of great small flower farms that are there teaching. So it's exciting.
Elise and Brightside Blooms are a small part of this resurgence, embedded in a local community, sharing the beauty of nature's flowers and the growing trend for small farmers in this billion-dollar industry. And Elise is a new farmer. She's learned a lot since leaving Big Pharma and buying this small farm in 2018. And it's not what you might expect, growing tulips and dahlias. It's more.
I didn't anticipate falling in love with the design side so much. I mean, I've always been a creative, but I thought in the beginning that growing flowers was just so cool. It was just this new frontier and it was so exciting. And I was learning about starting all these seeds and my, you know, just stuff that I had no idea of. It was just out of my wheelhouse. And as I got into like season 2 and then 3, I was like, you know, growing flowers is great. It's magical in and of itself. But that kind of fell to the wayside when I discovered that I really love the end result. Like growing is a means to an end for me. I love the florals so that I can create beautiful things or help people create beautiful things or watch their face light up when I hand them a bouquet. So it was interesting that like evolution for me, that it began with seed trays used to make me so excited, and now seed trays are just a means to an end.
I see Elise's passion for putting together floral bouquets much in the same way that you might see a dairy farmer finding a passion for cheese making and then wanting to teach you how to do it.
I liked what you said about your intention is really to build a community and to educate and to keep learning.
It's funny because some of the flower farmers I know, they want a community, but they don't necessarily want the customer too close to them. You know, like they're not opening up their barn for workshops. And, you know, my kids go running through our yard sometimes when there's 20 women here, you know, drinking wine and doing bouquets. And I've had to get used to that, you know, just there. There has to be kind of a coexistence that has to take place. And I think it's stressful for some people to open themselves up that much, which I understand.
I think about the farms around here that have a farm stand right next to their barn. They're in there cleaning it out and their house is right next door and they've got, you know, 30 people in there picking over their vegetables. So,
right. Yeah. It's a close relationship when you allow that to happen on your farm.
The Know Your Farmer movement has been on the rise for years, with the farmers market industry one of the key places that you can come face to face with a farmer, having grown 76% since 2008, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Perhaps one of the most significant groundswells for getting to know your local farmer came amid the initial panic over shortages of food in supermarkets during the onset of the COVID pandemic in early to mid-2020. Knowing a farmer at that time became synonymous with security. Anecdotally, across the nation, community-supported agriculture or CSA farm product subscriptions sold out. Knowing your farmer, what they face to produce good food, fiber, or even flowers for your dinner table, and supporting them can have an impact on local and regional food systems and the economic and social vibrancy of rural communities. It's like that in Howell, Michigan, at Brightside Blooms Flower Farm, where farmer Elise Forney is connecting her work to this small town where families live and grow. Old farmland gets a new life. Ladies gather for a night out, and teachers heal from a school shooting. Brightside Blooms, too, as small as it is, plays a vital part in a growing resurgence in the U.S. flower market. Thank you for diving into this episode of Talk Farm to Me, where you have had a unique opportunity to get to know one of our farmers. Together, all of the farmers on Talk Farm to Me, present and future, paint a picture of farming that is personal, intimate, and real. Stick with me for more conversations with serious farmers and check out how you too can be part of a vibrant community that supports the important work that farmers do on my website at xoxofarmgirl.com. Talk farm with you soon.